Right now, we bring to these microphones a man who I have envied for a number of years, and let me tell you why. Dr. Charlie Dyer is a good friend. We've known him for years. We've traveled and spoken in the same places. And, you know, when I heard that he went to Babylon, now I'm not talking about some amusement park. I'm talking about real Babylon on the shores of the Euphrates River, some 58 miles out of downtown Baghdad. From that moment, I started to envy him. And then a couple of years later, he went back again. That made me so mad I could have spit. But anyway, Charlie, it's great to have you here. And what I wanted to do was talk to you about Babylon itself. First of all, I told everybody that you traveled there twice to Babylon. How did you get there? Did they invite you? What happened?
It's the craziest thing, Jimmy. I had done my master's thesis on it. When I heard about Saddam Hussein holding a Babylon festival, I wrote to the Iraqi embassy and told them they needed to invite me. I got an appointment, went to the embassy, explained my interest, and it turns out the guy I was talking to grew up in Hilla, but just outside Babylon. So he gave me an invitation saying my presence was essential. I got there and found out that what he invited me as was a world-famous ethnomusicologist, which is one thing I am not. But it got me to Babylon. And then they issued another invitation, and of course, the minute they issued it, I went.
Well, when you got there, let me ask you this, Charlie. Was it as you imagined it to be? Was there enough of the archaeological remains in Babylon to recognize what has been there for 4,500 years?
You know, it really was amazing. In fact, there was a fellow in the turn of the century, Robert Koldewey, who had excavated. I got a copy of his excavation report, and it was like a map. I could follow my way around Babylon, but Saddam Hussein had built the Palace of Nebuchadnezzar. He'd built the procession street back. He built several of the temples back. And then the second time I was there, he had built three massive hills bracketing Babylon. I found out later, I was asking, what are they going to do with them? And they kind of hemmed and hawed. But later I noticed he put his palace on one of those hills, planned on putting palaces on the others. Nebuchadnezzar had a palace in Babylon. Saddam Hussein wanted Babylon inside his palace complex.
I understand that he thought he was the reincarnation of Nebuchadnezzar. They have a profile picture of him over the picture of Nebuchadnezzar. I mean, was that really a fantasy that he had going on in his mind at that time?
It really was. He believed, in fact, it made perfect sense too. That medallion that they made was the theme for the Babylon festival, and the English under it said, from Nebuchadnezzar to Saddam Hussein, Babylon undergoes a renaissance. But what we're seeing in Iraq right now, Saddam Hussein knew. There were Shiites, there were Sunnis, there were Kurds. He knew he couldn't unite them religiously, so he was trying to unite them by saying, look at this great Iraqi civilization in the past. Nebuchadnezzar was the leader then, I'm the leader now, and he tried to unite them against their enemies, Iran and Israel. And he focused, Nebuchadnezzar defeated the Jews. He's the only Arab to defeat the Jews, he said. And of course, who was the enemy of Babylon? It was the Iranians, the Persians. So he saw a use for Babylon as a way to unite these three different groups within Iraq.
Well, I heard reports that he spent $500 million on that refurbishing job of Babylon. Is that pretty much on target? And how far did he advance in his efforts?
I don't know the exact amount he spent, but he poured a lot of money into it. Again, if you can picture the Palace of Nebuchadnezzar being built on its original foundations, the temples being built on their original foundations, three massive hills, mountains, in the middle of this empty plain, and then building a massive palace on the one. He was pouring lots of money in, putting his name on the bricks. He wanted to be associated in his day the way Nebuchadnezzar was. And again, I think he saw it originally as just a nice archaeological site. But in the middle of the Iran-Iraq war, it took on far more political significance. And I find it interesting that today, as Iraq falls apart, they need something that's going to unite them together again. And Babylon could very well be it. You're going to see another Saddam Hussein-like person come along, I think, and pull that country together using Babylon.
Well, that country, of course, is not together. You mentioned the three factions, the Kurds in the north, the Sunnis in the middle part of the state, and the Shiites, which is the largest population, about 60% of the population there in the south. And they are not heeing and hawing together. They're not working at all. You have Prime Minister Maliki. He's trying to pull this whole thing together. He happens to be, I heard, was born and raised in Babylon itself, himself, or in the area right there. But when they're trying to build this war-torn country, it looks like to me, and I have seen a documentary produced by the New York Times that says they want to make this into the world's greatest tourist location, not terrorist, tourist location. And of course, that would be a unbelievable step up as far as this war-torn country coming back together, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it really would. And they have tried to make some of the tourist attractions. They've had some tourism, but it's right now a shell of what the government does want it to become. Again, they're fighting a war right now. It's making it difficult for them, but they want Babylon to be that great stepping stone. And that's where Saddam Hussein started. And then he went up from there, and I have a feeling that the government's going to do the same thing. Babylon is going to become this central uniting force. It's economic, it's commercial, it's political. It has all those elements to it, and you can just see it coming together.
Well, the Bible tells us in Isaiah 13 and 14, Jeremiah 15 and 51, Babylon will be destroyed, never to be rebuilt, never to be lived in again. I don't think we've had that prophecy fulfilled yet, do you? Do you think that Babylon is going to come back to power economically? You mentioned that just a moment ago.
Yeah, I'm absolutely convinced. And the passages you gave are the ones I would go to. If people would actually read Isaiah 13 and 14, it says Babylon's going to be destroyed in the day of the Lord. It's going to be destroyed when God's judging all the nations for their sin, when he's going to make humanity scarcer than pure gold. It's going to be destroyed in a way that'll never come back. From the day Isaiah wrote it till today, that's never happened. And we believe Bible prophecy is going to be literally fulfilled, which means that prophecy has to be fulfilled. Jeremiah builds on the same prophecy and says it's going to be like Sodom and Gomorrah, never inhabited again, in the day of the Lord when God restores the Jewish people. Again, I'm a simple man. I take the Bible and its word, and those two prophecies have never been fulfilled, which means Babylon needs to be rebuilt.
How do you see ISIS playing into this situation? This is presently what's happening. And you have this guy, al-Baghdadi, who is the head of ISIS. He's put in place so-called caliphate. He's the caliph. What do you think this is doing to play into the end-time scenario found in God's word?
You know, I wish I had the clearer understanding myself personally. I noticed he hates, he would not use Babylon or Nebuchadnezzar. In fact, he's been destroying the monuments in Mosul, in ancient Nineveh. But I wonder if the Shiites are going to use Babylon in a way to unite the Shiites and the Sunnis against these Islamic fundamentalists who are so severe. But right now, he is an incredible threat, both in Syria and Iraq. And they're struggling to find a way to stop him.
Well, I tell you what, we may not know the moment-by-moment details of Bible prophecy. We get the overall big picture from the prophetic scenario that's laid out in God's Word. And Babylon is going to be a major player in that end time. And indeed, we see it coming together. Charlie, we're probably closer to the fulfillment of those prophecies than we've ever been. It's an exciting time to be alive, isn't it?
You know, I agree completely. In fact, there are people who are worried about the world today. I look at it and say, when the world starts reading like the pages of the Bible, get excited because Jesus is coming back. This is one of the most exciting times we could ever be living in.
I tell you what, it's been exciting to have a conversation with you, Charlie. And I called Charlie not too long ago and I said, hey, we're trying to put together a group that's going to go over to Babylon. I would love to do a documentary video over there. I've been to many other locations, biblical important sites, as it relates to Bible prophecy. I want to go to Babylon. I said, would you like to go with us? He said, my bags are already packed. Would you go back again?
In a heartbeat, Jimmy. I want to go back so badly. It is an incredible place. It plays a major role in end time events. Why wouldn't I want to see it?
Absolutely. Charlie, thank you so much. Charlie and I have been the co-teachers here at Word of Life this week, having a great time teaching the people about God's prophetic word. Charlie, God bless you. Godspeed as you travel. We'll talk again along the way.
Thanks, Jimmy. It's just great being with you.